In a communication of December 28, 1866, Lord Carnarvon acknowledged he had received the draft of the bill that was submitted by John A. Macdonald, the chairman of the Canadian delegates, who each signed their copy of the draft. At this time, Lord Carnarvon told John A. Macdonald he was sending the draft to the printers to be printed. This was done, as we have in the Ottawa archives printed copies of this draft. Each delegate from Canada signed his own copy. The British North American Act passed the second reading of the House of Commons without being printed. See the Hansards, February 26, 1867. How did the bill get past the first reading without printed copies? How can a bill be viewed or debated in the House if it has no copies to read or review? Between December 28th and February 9th, 1866-67, we were then informed by Sir Frederick Rogers, Undersecretary of the State for the Colonies.
They held many meetings at which I was always present. Lord Carnarvon was in the chair, and I was rather disappointed in his power of presidency. I have always believed, and it is hard to believe anyone would think otherwise, that the purpose of our office is to secure that our relationship with Canada, while less, shall be profitable to both England and Canada, not to one side or another. And our separation, when it comes, is fair to both parties. The principle that the nation of Canada cannot possibly handle its own affairs when it does become separated is ridiculous, and a colony becomes a nation upon separation. Canada will not submit to being governed by a foreign government of a geographically distinct country who is not in touch with the happenings of that nation. It is ridiculous to think that two geographically distant nations could possibly have anything in common as to legally bind them together permanently in any kind of foreign policy. There will only be problems that will arise from this relationship in the future.
The actual words of the preamble are, "By reason of a request of the colonies for federal government, it is expedient, therefore, that they have laws and regulations to guide them." Lord Campbell, leader of the opposition in the House of Lords, in opening his speech after the second reading of the bill, February 26, 1867, said,
"The bill is founded, I believe, on what is termed the Quebec Scheme 1864. We may not be privy to all the information on this scheme, and I am not here to discuss that now. However, one thing is clear. The preamble of the resolution is perfectly clear in its intention and meaning."
There is no reason to doubt that the House of Lords believed they were enacting a measure that would permit the provinces to form a federal union. The page which clearly states the intention and motives for which the bill was created and enacted is not part of the copies of the Act that came to Canada. Instead, we got a substitution. The substitution reads, "Whereas the provinces of Canada, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, have expressed their desire to be federally united into one dominion." This is not a true statement and does not mean the same thing as the original preamble. Now let's hear what the Privy Council has to say. Lord Watson, chairman of the Privy Council Maritime Bank case in 1892, recognizes the object, reason for its existence, of the document as stated in the preamble is the most important intention of the document as a whole.
"The object of the Act was to create a federal union, entrusted with the administration of mutual common interests between the provinces. but each province retaining its independence and autonomy.
Why was the page which contains this important meaning for the BNA Act's interpretation missing from the printed copies circulated in Canada? It was done to twist the meaning of the Act so that Canada should be retained as a colony. After passing the House of Lords and taken to the UK House of Commons February 26, the debate centered on the intercolonial railway, and the bill was not discussed. Evidently, everyone thought it had been debated previously in the House of Lords, so no big deal. One member asked the government, "What seems to be the rush in enacting this measure?" Even though he admitted he probably would not have any reason to oppose it, he was just curious that this bill seemed to be given the fast track through the usual processes. He was quoted as saying, "I am not sure I will have anything against it, but it affects 4 million people, and we should have an opportunity to study the bill, which is now in the second reading without being printed." After passing the Commons, it received the assent of Queen Victoria on March 29, 1867, to become effective on July 1, 1867. What is the British North American Act? The BNA Act is not and never has been legal and valid as the Constitution of Canada. Canada has no constitution. This Act is a private bill conceived and drafted by the Colonial Office and enacted into a statute by the Imperial Parliament, uniting four colonies into one colony. It is important to mention that there was strenuous opposition by Nova Scotia against the Act, and as protest, they signed a 30,000-name petition, and in the May elections, Dr. Tupper's government was defeated. Dr. Tupper and Stuart Campbell were the only two returned out of the 38 seats. Tupper resigned. Joseph Howe and eight members were delegated to take the petition to the Imperial Parliament and claim that Nova Scotia be relieved of this act, or that a Royal Commission of Inquiry be appointed. Tupper was a long-time political enemy of Howe and followed him to London and caught Howe in his hotel.
"Nothing that I can say will defer you from placing your petition before the Parliament. However, they will not grant your request. When they refuse, come back to Canada and take a cabinet seat at Ottawa, and we'll do the best with what we got."
Howe was dumbfounded, for he thought Tupper, who was involved in the Quebec Resolution, was partly responsible for drafting the BNA Act bill. Howe got John Bright to place the petition before Parliament. It was, as Tupper predicted, defeated, the vote being 183-87. Nova Scotia was forced against her wishes to be a member of the Dominion. In a speech leaving London, Howe said the following:
"We go home to share the perils of our native land, in whose service we consider it an honor to labor, and whose fortunes in this darkest hour of her history it would be cowardice to desert."